It said that you should never start a presentation with an apology, so I'll start with two. The first is that the remit that I was initially given was very broad, and there were a million thoughts going through my minds, and therefore when I started putting this presentation together, I started about the sort of 74, 75 slide version, and have ruthlessly weeded it out down to, I don't know, about 30 or so, to fit into the 20 minutes. What that means is an awful lot of what I think about wargaming, and I think about wargaming passionately, has been removed. So I'm happy to explore anything you want when we come to questions. Second is that as a result of lots of good things I heard yesterday, it was at about 1:30 this morning that I finished pulling slides out and putting other ones back in again. So if things happen on the screen behind me that I'm not expecting, I apologise for that. This is the remit that Graham reiterated for me yesterday that I sort of alluded to when I started. So what he wants from me is give some sort of top-down views. I'm not really going to do that, but I'm going to try and fulfil that remit by not doing that. I'm going to point out some common problems, and I am going to offer some advice, but I've deliberately written that advice really small when I come to offer that advice, because I'm not a humble man, but I offer it genuinely and humbly, because actually all of us, and we are a community, all of us have got a part to play in working out whether that advice is right or doing it in other ways, but actually trying to crack what I think those problems are. And I'm going to try and do a bit of amateur psychology on the military mind as I go through, but I've got one of those, so a bit of introspection has helped. So those are the big issues, I think. I'm going to go through those eight things. But before I do go through them, I think it is worth just reflecting on one or two of the things that we've talked about already over the last day or so. We've all jotted down good thoughts from all of the people that have been speaking. Here are some of them, spread from across the piece, and I'll return to some of those. But a couple of things that I really thought were worth pointing out over and above the remarks that have already been made is I think this is a jolly good start as a Connections UK, but there are a couple of groups that are really seriously underrepresented here if what we're trying to do is make connections. One of which is the commercial world of the producers of recreational wargaming. There are people here from that community. They were introduced at the beginning, but we said what we're really talking about is the professional thinking, academic provider and the military. Well, actually, there are three stools to this chair, and if you're not one of those, three legs to this stool, if you knock one of those legs out too robustly, you'll find the stool's quite hard to sit on. And I think there should be more representation. But the leg of that stool that's really wobbly is the military leg. There aren't many military people here. There need to be a great deal more, and I know that plenty have been invited. We've all got a part to play in making sure that there are more and those that matter next time around for this really to make connections, and there's a clue in the title. And we'll talk about how we do that afterwards. The second observation is one that was keyed by Dick Hensley's remark yesterday. There's an inevitability once you've crossed the start line, particularly if you've got the planning wrong, that it's all going to go horribly wrong and you stand and watch with horror as it does. Well, yeah, I've seen that, as you have, Dick, often. But I would say that that happens to people who are dogmatic about doctrine and who are proscriptive about the use of initiative. Because actually, if you're doctrinaire, if you're imaginative about the application of doctrine, and if you use and offer initiative, you accept that no plan survives contact with the enemy, etc. So it is all inevitably going to go wrong immediately. And there isn't an inevitability at all. But actually, wargaming is a cheap and effective way of hammering that factor into people's brains. And if you wargame with the people that you're going to go to war with, it gives you a confidence in delegating initiative to them too. And we need to get that message across in spades. And I guess the last point that's been reinforced repeatedly today, particularly by Rex and with Tom's general butt naked, and actually with the strap line for two fat lardies, playing the period, not the rules, is actually, it is all about unpredictability. It's not about answers. And I've been alarmed by several of the questions over the last couple of days along the lines of, yeah, well, that's all very well, but it doesn't seem to give me any certainty that I can take away, pack in a box and give to somebody as the correct answer. That's because life, let alone war, just ain't like that. So beware what you promise. And if you promise operational analysis and certainty and wargaming and answers, you're probably going down a very dangerous course. Okay, so to the first problem. There's a brain versus brawn problem in the military. And if you ask a soldier, which one of those two would you prefer to fight? He's going to go for Stephen Hawking, not Fran Cotton, every time. But that's because his mind immediately defaults to the gladiatorial combat between those two individuals. Whereas actually, who would you prefer to be generaling against you? Well, I don't know Fran personally. But if I'm teaching generalship, and for 2.5 years I was, it seems to me that actually I'm more interested in whether he can position him properly than whether he has been promoted to do his job because I bled with him when I was 22 years old and he deserves it. And that's a serious military problem, not just in my military, but in all of them. You've got a part to play in that. Phil used the expression in several different guises yesterday, a fitness program for military thinking. So here's my humble advice. If you want to help solve that problem in militaries, speaking their language about what it is that you're offering is probably not a bad idea. They like the PT side. Without blowing my own trumpet too much, one of the very nice valedictory letters that I got from a very senior general when I left went through all the wonderful things that I'd done in a 34-year career, and then highlighted at the end, "And Andrew, what you must be most proud of is finally being capped for the army as a rugby player aged 50, the oldest man ever to play rugby for the army." Well, I'm very proud of that. But the honest truth is, I wore shirt number 17 as reserve, I played for 17 minutes opposite an international prop, and I was 17 months in physiotherapy. And yet, in all of those accolades of a 34-year career, what had happened upon as the thing that I must be most proud of was that I could look like that age 50. Strange, but true. The next, of course, is image against self-image. And those of us who are gamers, and Phil will be dealing with this shortly, have that image. We're either kids or nerds, or worse still, nerdy kids who've never grown up. That's just a fact you've got to accept. The other fact that you've got to accept is the self-image of the soldier, who actually, by the way, probably was a nerd, and definitely was a kid, and quite possibly was a nerdy kid, but is now a 19 or 20-year-old trying to prove that he isn't. And therefore, his self-image must be that. And if you threaten him, if you threaten that self-image by implying to him that he might be interested in what these sorts of people are interested in, he's going to reject it automatically. And the more he feels it's true because he likes it, the harder he's going to fight against it. We all know when we argue with our wives or husbands that the more right they are in the argument, the more angry we become. So when dealing with this problem, I suggest to you that if you bound in with great enthusiasm, like an over-enthusiastic salesperson trying to sell a large person Lycra, you're going to be rejected. The more you tell the gladiator that there might be an element of him that isn't as gladiatorial as he thinks, the more he will reject you. So you, the wargaming practitioners, need to outmaneuver and infiltrate, not bound in with nauseous enthusiasm. Next is that military folk have a fascination with kit. The army are fond of saying that the Navy and the Air Force are more fascinated with kit than they are, but the truth is that it applies to all of them. But just to get doctrinal on you for a moment, military capability is comprised of three components of fighting power: the physical, the moral, and the conceptual. More of that from great men in a moment. And it seems to me that not much of that has got to do with kit, because actually the physical component is kit, and it's people in the kit too, and we've heard lots of allusions to whether a tank is driven by a competent bloke or not, or an aircraft or a missile system or whatever. And people stuff in here, and people stuff in there. So one third of what you do, at least, is conceptual component, for which a fitness program can be produced by wargaming cheaply and effectively. So reminding the military, and the army in particular, because the army are very fond of sneeringly reminding the Air Force and the Navy that they do people, not kit, is to remind them that if they do people, they'd better exercise their conceptual component as much as they do the physical component of their people. Next and briefly, and I spoke about this at the beginning, I think you, the wargaming providers, need to be very careful about your own language. I won't overstress it because I think I'm about the fourth or fifth person to have said that in the last couple of days. But actually, in your enthusiasm to sell yourself, particularly if you're charging for your services, that includes the DSTL, be careful about what you promise and what you call yourself. Be careful about what you promise from operational analysis. And the fact is that to somebody who sees himself as a serious soldier, and these are both serious quotes from my serious two-star boss when I was a serious one-star head of research for defence, operational analysis is easier to sell, because you go to people with a mindset like that and you say, I can produce answers for you. I can analyse and produce answers. So, be clear on the terms that you use and be clear about the strengths and weaknesses of both of those two things. I talked about doctrine and dogma already. What we say is that doctrine should be about how to think, not what to think. It shouldn't be a template. We shouldn't be tire levering templates onto things. History repeats itself, we're told, like most of what Marx said, good in theory, not so good in practice. Mark Twain, who's much more readable, said, history does not repeat itself, but it sure as hell rhymes. And I think that's one of the most profound statements about learning from history. Because if you expect it to rhyme, you expect it to be similar, but therefore by definition, you also expect it to be different. And if you are not dogmatic, you understand that doctrine is not a template. It's merely a guideline for you to do your own free thinking, to be comfortable with uncertainty and complexity. And whatever you design to deliver must shy away from template answers, because actually quite a lot of the military mind likes being given a template. certainly an old military mind that had its formative years where Soviet tactics templates were handed out to you to slap on your map because that's what was going to happen. And the real wake-up call for me on that message was the great Mungo Melvin staff ride of the war that never was around northern Germany. And the guy speaking on behalf of the Red Forces was the then head of the Ukrainian army, who'd gone from major to major general in the group of Soviet forces, Germany. And the opening presentation was by a bunch of subject matter experts, we've heard about them already, on what would have happened. And the rumble started at about 5 minutes into the 20-minute presentation. The guffaw was uncontrollable by halfway through. And by the end, tears were rolling down the vodka-popped cheeks of this ancient Ukrainian. And he said, "By God, I wish we'd fucking gone." But actually, all the men sitting around him, as these templates were going up, were nodding with recognition and certainty, because that's what they'd been told by subject matter experts was going to happen. There will be people who seek certainty and answers. It's actually your responsibility, please, not to offer it. I think also, and Phil, this is your quote from yesterday, we have a real rehearsal and experimentation problem in the army. We've now got ourselves in a training loop that trains, not educates. And if you'll forgive me a vulgar explanation of what that means, the best one I've heard, there's lots of confusion between what training and education means, the distinction between the two, but the best one I've heard is, if your 12-year-old daughter came back from school and said, "Today I've had sex education," you'd put that down as a good thing. The parents' evening would be interesting if the alternative was proposed by them. But there's an explanation for why that is so. The training loop, the training requirement, the amount of time people have got to do stuff, the time between operational tours has become so tight that if you're on the operational loop, which is most of the army, actually getting into the Helmand village in Norfolk means that you have to run through the drills to get the tick to say you're ready, you understand the drills. It doesn't give you time to take a chance, to experiment, to think, to move around, to try options. You've got to go through the loop. That's not healthy. But those who are in the training loop, it may be that when they get out to Canada with their battle group, for the one time in their 2 years as a commanding officer or as a company commander, they're only going to get this one opportunity to do this whole thing with their heavy metal. And these guys, in that vehicle, that vehicle, that vehicle, that vehicle, that vehicle, one of these, and half of those, know that they are what I call OJAR-con. There are lots of states of command. The OJAR is the annual report. Under annual report command of him, who's also under the annual report command of someone like me. And they're going to do it once. So he's not going to have a swimmingly good idea about how to do something totally different and give it a try. He's going to do what he's told as best as he can, because he gets this one chance for this guy to write that wonderful line in his report saying, "And at Battus, he dot dot dot." And he doesn't want it to say, "Had a swimmingly good idea that 9 times out of 10 might have worked, but boy, was it a complete cock-up." That's the reality. But actually, this is really where you come in. Because it seems to me that wargaming, in all of its guises, is absolutely a cure to those deep fundamental problems about not the training, but the education of our war leaders. I guess Ivor might say something about that in a moment. And as a follow-on from that, which is the second bullet, we really have an aversion to being tactically tested. Now, I'd like to say that I really don't know what it's a symptom of, but I do, and it's a symptom of a fear of being found out. And if I were to dive deep into the problems of military promotion, without getting too bitter and twisted about it, it seems to me, and I won't talk about the army, I'll step out of that, I'll talk about the RAF, that actually if you want to make Air Marshal operational and strategic thinker, you're much more likely to get there if you've got good hand-eye coordination that as a 20-year-old gave you a badge with some wings on than you are if you're a clever bloke who's studied books and thought a lot. Not sure you need good hand-eye coordination to be an Air Marshal. That applies across the piece. And it means that Fran Cottons don't want to be tested to see if they're Stephen Hawking's, because they might not be. So we shy away from it. And I find that bizarre. Throughout my 34 years, you're supposed to be tested on your fitness twice a year. As an infantryman, there are half a dozen other million tests that you do. Your body is repeatedly tested from age, whatever it is you join, 17, 18, 20s, up until you're 50, whatever, when you leave, to see whether you can run like a 20-year-old and lift heavy weights. But only twice in my career was my tactical mind actually formally tested. Once at Sandhurst and once at the Staff College. The sepia nature of the Staff College photograph is not a reflection of the length of time since I attended it, but just the only one that I can find on the interweb. And actually, when it was tested at the Staff College, and I have no difficulty with being tested by a truck driver, but the lieutenant colonel who tested the young major was a truck driver who, in this particular case, was not a very bright man, who was reading from the template pink sheet of paper answer about the answer I should have come up with because it was the correct answer to the tactical problem. I had difficulty with that. Twice in 34 years. That's not right. And it seems to me that actually what wargaming has got as a role to play in all of that is a real way of getting over that aversion. And then finally there's ignorance. Poor old Redvers Buller, he's always up when it's ignorant generals, isn't he? I'm not going to labour. It's always harder to get an old idea out of a military mind than a new idea in and all that sort of stuff. But there is lashings of that, and that's what we're going to talk about in the Q&A, which will run over a while because we did start late. But my advice to you is, first of all, find out who the enlightened and influential people are and engage with them. Don't just battery enthusiasm, to return to one of my earlier remarks. And then secondly, infiltrate by stealth rather than trying to take this thing head on. And you need to target this wisely. The chief instructor at Sandhurst. Sandhurst doesn't war game. Army Force Development and Training. The DCDC, where the wargaming guide's supposed to be being published under my name, well, it's now a year since I left the place. Places that can really make a difference are where you need to target. And you need to target those gladiators, i.e. the people with real credibility who get it, who can stand up in front of generals and go, sorry, General, do you not get this? As opposed to quite right, General. Here's the bottom line. It's about minds, not stuff, isn't it? And wargaming is about minds with stuff as a vehicle. Battles lost through loss of hope, loss of blood. You can reel out the quotes from the great men, but they all say the same thing. When you're playing a game of chess, you don't stare at the board, looking at the pieces, and saying, I wonder what that bishop is going to do next. Unless, of course, you're playing against a bishop, in which case... And then we get people talking about influence, to return to the question from earlier on. And this really troubles me, because people talk about influence operations. They talk about kinetic versus influence. Well, I can tell you, if you shoot someone, he's fucking influenced. And actually, so's his family and his friends and the bloke in the trench next to him. Everything you do in war is about influencing what people think about their part in the war. There's no such thing as influence operations. All operations influence. The most frustrating conference I ever had as a soldier was chaired by a brigadier who kept saying, "Now, yeah, but who in the headquarters is going to be responsible for influence?" And it seemed to me, and when I finally snapped, I told him so, rather too publicly, that that was rather like asking, who in the headquarters is responsible for victory? So stop separating them out and understand that that is what it's about. That's what Clausewitz, Napoleon, and everybody else is telling you, or Mrs. Clausewitz, of course, because it was she who wrote the book, until they're purple in the face. So an anecdote is the last word. My adjutant, when Graham was one of my company commanders, was a man who looked not unlike Frank Cotton, rather larger, whose great claim to rugby fame was when playing for Gloucester, he'd had his ear torn off and had put it in his pocket until half time, because he didn't want to miss anything. But he also had a seriously good brain. And he came home one day in the evening to drop some stuff off me to look through that was going to take about half an hour, and my then 6-year-old son had set out on the dining room table his army of Warhammer goblins. And the adjutant tooled in to see what was going on whilst I was reading things and was very soon setting things up and very soon playing. Now, I spent my time at Sandhurst as a chief instructor teaching pin, pivot, punch. And because I was stubborn, I also taught pursue, but we were told in those days that the Soviets were too strong to pursue, so I wasn't allowed to teach it, being stubborn, I did. So along comes a template red enemy, you pin him in position, you pivot round, you punch him, that's how you do tactics. And yet generations of officer cadets would say, yes, write it all down and stand up on the practical tactical exam and not do that. They'd all had lots of other ideas. Good, they were experimenting, you might think, well, yes, but actually they needed to learn the drills first. And what I observed as I walked into the dining room was my young son with a little unit of snotlings up against a large unit of Chaos Knights. And I thought, this is going to end in tears. So I said, come on, I'll make you a squash. And I had a word with him and said, what do you think you're doing? This is going to end in tears. He said, no, Dad, you don't understand. He said, I've done the maths, and I've thought about this, and the only way that I can beat his unit of Chaos Knights is if I get round behind them with my Goblin Wolf Riders and attack them from the back. But I need to hold them in place for a while, and it'll take at least 2 turns of combat for the Chaos Knights to kill all of the snotlings, and they're the cheapest points in my army, so it doesn't matter if I lose. Aha, I thought. Pin, pivot, punch. And not only did he do that, but he also pursued. And it did end in tears. But not his. My point is that actually it doesn't matter what you're doing with wargaming. Sneer at none of it, because all of it exercises your brain. all of it exercises that complicated muscle in a way that is relevant to what I have spent my life doing as a profession. And what goes on in there and there is just as important as what goes on in there.